Hello and welcome to Healthy Mind, Healthy Life with your host Avik. This podcast is all about exploring the latest research, sharing personal stories and providing personal tips for improving our mental health and well-being. Each episode will be joined by experts in the field of mental health as well as individuals who have experienced the transformative power of a healthy mind firsthand. Together, we will dive into a range of topics from managing stress and anxiety to building resilience and cultivating happiness. So, join us on this journey to discover new ways to take care of our minds, bodies, and souls. And let's work together to create a healthier, happier world one episode at a time. So, let's get started. Hello and welcome to Healthy Mind, Healthy Life. I'm your host Avik, where we delve into the intricacies of mental well-being and the personal growth. So I'm thrilled to have Darren Elliott with us today. So welcome to the show, Darren.
Thank you so much. I'm really happy to be here, Avik.
Lovely, lovely. So Darren, like before we start our conversation, I'd love to mention this to all of our listeners that Darren is not just a survivor of narcissistic abuse, but he's also a highly respected psychotherapist specializing in narcissism and relational healing. So his journey from victim to therapist provides him with a unique perspective on the subject. So his work focuses on unraveling the complexities of narcissism and at the same time understanding its energetic processes and guiding individuals towards healing and transformative relationships. Yes. So why to wait? Join us as we explore the profound insights Darren brings to the table, shedding the light on the path to the emotional growth, healing, and fostering the genuine connection in our lives. So with this, welcome to the show again, Darren.
Thank you so much, Amek. I appreciate that. You know, I need to clarify, in my business, we're not allowed to say healing. So I work with narcissism in a way that people do change their lives and they do have a lot of change, but I'm not allowed to use that word. I'm not allowed to in psychotherapy. It's not something we're able to claim, even if we are having major shifts in someone in who they are in the world. But yeah, I have learned this to become a disorder of disconnection, and people who are suffering from narcissism are not deeply connected with others, and that is the main problem that's going on. So that's the main problem I'm dealing with, mostly in coaching. Honestly, it takes coaching to change and shift the way they are in the world and shift their relationships, the way they interact with others, because they have so many defense mechanisms that keeps them from being close.
Understood. Understood. Great. Yeah. So to start with, like, definitely, because I have read your bio and I'm really, really thrilled to it. So if you can share a bit more about your personal journey, like from being a survivor of the narcissistic abuse to becoming a psychotherapist specializing in this, if you can say.
Yeah, sure. Thank you, Avik. Yeah, it's I grew up in a family that you know, whatever you grow up with is normal for you. So you grow up and you have your senses around you and your family's, you know, your first model of what's happening in the world. And so the way it is there, you're not going to know it's anything other than normal until you get out into the world and see that there's different things out in the world. In my case, I couldn't see the dysfunction that was happening in my own family until I was, oh gosh, well into my 30s. And I knew I was living out dysfunction. I knew my relationships were dysfunctional in some ways. And it was only at the end of a really painful, painful breakup. I had a relationship with someone and the relationship ended from one day to the next. And I had thought we were very connected. I had thought we were deeply in love. I thought we were committed. I thought we were soulmates, but it was just from one conversation, they decided that we were no longer a couple, and it was done with such an on-off switch from being loving and romantic one day to being like, oh, I guess we're done then, because Well, it had been a conversation about whether we were going to buy a house together, and I wasn't ready to buy a house, and it wasn't the city I wanted to live in. And it was a very casual conversation, and with that, we were done. And we had been living together for a year. We had been so intimate. We had been very, very close. But that the sudden finish with me, that complete break from being like my closest person to you don't exist to me anymore. It caused me to be so broken as a person, I could barely function, because the relationship was real on my side. I was in love. I thought we were committed. I was committed. I was in the relationship. I had no idea that they were not. It's called projection. We assume the other's having the same experience that we are sometimes. And the pain of this, I couldn't cope. I ended up, I couldn't sleep. I couldn't eat. The places we were together, it was all just very difficult for me. I was feeling that the betrayal and the rejection, and just that psychic pain. I went away to study and to figure what has happened. And I was researching how to get over a breakup, and I was researching how to feel better. And I started to come across some information about narcissism that was, I didn't know anything about narcissism. It was, I had sort of the misconception that it was just someone who looked in the mirror too much and thought too much of themselves and would brag a lot. A braggart, I guess. I thought a narcissist was a braggart. So that's not at all what my partner looked like, and I didn't recognize it. But when I came to understand, the more I looked into narcissism, the more I realized this is exactly what I'm dealing with. And as I studied it more, I suddenly saw my father on the pages, and I had not realized my father was narcissistic. But once I started studying it, all the pieces of my life and all the mess came together for what's gone wrong, not just in my life, but in the life of my siblings. And it was a painful realization, because we had been to therapists for various different things, and the therapists never recognized the narcissistic abuse. They never recognized the narcissistic patterns. We had individualistic therapy that tried to help us to be okay on our own, and that in a way supports narcissism, because narcissism, it really is about being strong on your own and not relying on others. And so my connection came from my father being a narcissist, but I didn't wake up until my late 30s after having this painful narcissistic abusive relationship. And that's common for people that to not see it, for that to be blind to them. Yeah. So during that journey, eventually my study of narcissism led me into such a deep therapy journey that I enrolled in a psychotherapy program, a 5-year training program. And through that program, as soon as we were able to practice as a clinician with clients, I started working with narcissism very soon after as a student therapist. And my program kept telling me that you can't work with narcissism. And I kept saying, but I am working with narcissism. And they're like, but you can't. Like, but I am. My passion was to work with narcissistic abuse survivors, because I understood that kind of PTSD that happens from the gaslighting, the turning of tables for they always have to be right, so that means you always have to be wrong. It impacts your self-esteem, and it impacts your feeling of safety in the world. It impacts your feeling of who you are as a person. It impacts your other relationships. They often isolate a partner or a best friend, so that you become reliant on that relationship, and your other relationships sort of fall away. It happens over time. It's just they cause this sort of addiction process where the validation is on and off, because they are on and off. So sometimes you're getting a positive feedback, and sometimes you're not getting a positive feedback, because they're just giving you nothing. And you get sort of addicted to trying to make them feel good so that they'll be on their positive. That was my long journey into working with it. But as I was working with the abuse survivors, and I can't quite remember how I ended up starting to work with narcissism themselves, except I guess they started coming to me. And I realized after the first one essentially let me behind the curtains, it sort of felt like Wizard of Oz. If you've seen Wizard of Oz, and you know there's the main character is behind a curtain, and he's a big controlling superpower figure, but actually behind the curtain he's just this little guy with a microphone. So working with a narcissist to me feels like that. You know, they let me behind the curtain, and we're sort of looking at the world through their lens and their filters, and I'm sharing my honest experiences with them, bringing sort of humanity into their inner circle. Because really the problem is that they've had no one in their inner circle. They have, for various different reasons, developed an inner psyche where they're just all alone. And as you know, as a human, if we're locked away alone, well, solitary confinement is a horrible punishment, right? It's it does terrible damage. So when you put yourself in solitary confinement by not sharing what's actually happening for you, by hiding what's happening for you, by pretending to be okay when you're not, by pretending to be the thing, well, they tend to lose reality a bit because they get so used to pretending. I have ADHD as well, Avik, and I will ramble on in my answers, just so you know. I always come out and share with people that I have ADHD because it does come out in my speaking, and it comes out in my work sometimes as well.
Understood. It's a long story, but there's a lot to learn from it for sure. That I'll definitely say. So with this, like, because you have already mentioned everything, but one more thing is coming. Narcissism, like, so what are some of the common misconceptions, or rather I would say myths about it, that you have encountered in your work?
Yeah, I guess the biggest myth is, a lot of people just think narcissists are bad people, and they think that because the impact of their behavior on others is often trauma causing. What they might not understand is most people who are causing others trauma are traumatized themselves. If you're feeling safe and happy and loved in your body, you're generally going to be nice to others. You're not attacking your neighbors and saying mean things if you're feeling happy and joyful and comfortable. But if you're feeling like others are against you and people are not very nice, and that the world's not a very good place, and that everyone's out for themselves, that's not going to inspire very good behavior, right? So a big part of it is actually their worldview. It's a traumatized worldview, in fact. But as humans, we evolved to love each other. Honestly, we evolved in community. Empathy is a trait that evolved over time. It's the ability to feel with each other. And we evolved in community as humans to share each other's pain and to live in community. And never in the history of our species have we lived so separately as we do now. And that's part of what's happening, is the separation, the need to be strong alone. If you need to be strong alone, you might tell yourself all sorts of things to make yourself stronger, like, oh, I don't need them anyway. If you have a parent who's incompetent and at giving you life skills, you might as a child, you might say, like, oh, it's okay, I'm better than mom anyway, I know how to do it better than she does. You might start telling yourself those kind of, like, I don't need anyone anyway, I'm good enough by myself, those kind of divisive separation things. And it's narcissism can also come with from a feeling of not belonging, from a feeling of difference. They take that feeling of not feeling their connection with others. And they're not feeling their connection with others because they're not quite co-regulating with others. That's sort of the essential problem, is that as humans, we co-regulate together. That means, like, how I feel impacts how you are feeling. If you're in a bad mood, it's hard for me to stay in a good mood if I'm with you and close to you, right? We feel that sort of pull into the negative energy. If you're in a super cheerful mood, you might sort of pull me up into that super cheerful mood. So we need people to co-regulate with us, especially our intimate partners. We've evolved to be co-regulating with our intimate partners. Children learn how to regulate originally from their caregivers. so it's essential that they have that kind of reciprocal, that kind of empathic response to their needs and to their emotions. And if they don't have that, they don't learn to connect with their emotions in a healthy way. So as an adult, someone who's suffering narcissism is really way too alone in their experience, too alone in their emotions. They've not been sharing their inner experience with others, so they don't feel fully seen and understood. And they don't even realize that's a need that would cause them to feel close to others, because they don't meet that need. They may have developed the idea that you have to put forth your best version of yourself into the world, and that caused them to pretend to be happy when they're not happy, for example. That's disowning their true experience and then not being understood by others when they're pretending to be happy when they're not. So they can end up disowning a lot of their energy. This basically, we're going into how it works too. If you are trying to not ever face your negative emotions, unfortunately, you still do have a nervous system, so you can't just make that choice. What you end up doing is numbing yourself to your body sensations, essentially. If you're not able to feel your negative emotions, you can't, unfortunately, selectively choose which emotions you're not going to feel. It causes you to feel everything a bit less if you're trying not to feel certain things. But also, if I'm not willing to go into my negative emotions, like if I don't go into sadness, if something starts to make me feel sad and then I immediately distract myself and don't go there. And that was my father. You know, if something profoundly bad was happening, he wasn't going to go to sadness. He would go to neutrality. He would go to distraction. He would go to somewhere else. Pardon me, Evic. I just had one of my ADHD moments and literally blanked in the middle. I need you to pull me back in for a second. The last thing I said, it was regarding.
Yeah, it's all about, you're saying about your father.
Oh, right. It's all about the disconnection. That's what people don't understand, right? They see narcissists as being mean people who think they're better than others, who narcissistically abuse others by changing reality. They deny other people's reality. But they often believe their own lies. They're not sharing their reality enough with others to have clarified it. As humans, we need to share our ideas with others. We're not meant to keep them to ourselves. We need to talk about all the things that are happening for us, to share our emotional experiences and our ideas, to bounce them off. And that's how we know they're real. And if we're not bouncing our ideas and feelings and emotions off other humans, we actually lose touch with reality. And if I don't know if you've seen, there's a movie called Castaway that has Tom Hanks in it, but he's trapped on a desert island and he ends up making a ball into his only friend. But you can watch his slow descent away from reality when a human does not have other humans that are mirroring back the reality to them. They'd lose reality. We need others. A narcissist is not letting others share the reality enough, and they are losing touch with reality. And then their reality really feels real to them. And because they are separated from others, it feels too painful to think that I might be less than others. Like I don't belong for some reason, because there's something wrong with me that I don't feel this connection that other people feel. So therefore, I'm going to go the other way and defend and like, well, I'm better than others. I don't need them anyway. I'm going to see other people maybe as emotionally weak. It's just, in trying to feel okay, I'm having to reach for grandiosity. But grandiosity also feels good. So people can end up living in grandiosity and creating a life that supports it. But an awful lot of narcissists live in grandiosity but do not have a life that supports it, because often they're not. I mean, there's lots of doctors who are narcissistic and you know, had to be perfect and really, really were not going to settle for anything but perfection and really work to be the best and to be the top and to be seen as the best. But there's also people who weren't able to do such things who are, you know, the cleaner in the school. So what does a cleaner in a school narcissist look like? Well, he looks very different than Trump, because he's a cleaner in a school. He doesn't have a position that supports him to to his grandiosity. So he's going to have a very different orientation, but he's still dealing with that separation from others. And in this case, he's going to be going for validation of pity, possibly. If life isn't going your way and you're suffering from narcissism, quite often you become what's called a covert narcissist, which looks very different. That's another misconception people have, is that narcissists are always big and showy. Probably most of them aren't. It depends on your lifestyle, what kind of outlook it's going to end up taking. Yeah, because some lifestyles don't support the belief that I live a grandiose life, because it's so far from reality. I can take a question and go very many different ways with it.
I understand. No, that's true. So with this, what are some of the key strategies, or maybe the techniques that you use to help individuals unpack their narcissistic woundings and also foster a healthier relationship?
Yeah, that's a great question. Well, first I'll go, those are two different questions, sort of. The first one I'll go to is the relationships. I've only had narcissistic clients who come in because their relationships are falling apart. So, because the reason they don't usually ever receive treatment is because they don't wake up and realize there's anything wrong with them. Their defenses are so strong that the problem is always yours. It's always the other person's fault. So it's uncommon for someone suffering from narcissism to look at themselves and think, wait, there's something wrong with me. I think I need to get some help so I can stop, being abusive to others and destroying my relationships. It's hard for them to recognize. They only recognize that if all their relationships are falling apart. So when I meet them, they're usually in a marriage that they really want to keep because they're married to an amazing person, which is often the case, because it's the kind of person who has lots of patience to be with someone who needs all the attention, and letting them be right and letting them have the space and letting them have the spotlight, and also making them feel good. So that relationship's usually in jeopardy, and as well as all their other ones. And they'll be like, I don't know what's going on. My friends don't want to talk to me. My wife hates me. My children don't like me. Sometimes I even feel like my parents don't like me. Like, okay. So then very quickly in our conversation, we'll start uncovering the abuse that they are delving out to the people in their lives. And so the very first thing is stopping them from abusing others. And so they develop I'm able to see what's happening to them in an energetic way. So that because of that, they're able to trust me, because they come in and they start sharing. And then I ask if they want me to give them feedback. And then I start guessing about what's actually happening for them inside. And I make my best guess. So when you said this, did you feel like this? And so I'm able to reach in and show them, like, I do recognize you are having these human experiences. So as soon as they're able to feel seen in their authentic experience with me and recognize, like, oh wow, you see my brokenness and you're not judging me. And it's like, no, of course I'm not judging me. You're just another human. We're just two humans. Programming the equality, they've lost the relationship with the equality of mankind, and that's something that needs to work over time as well. And it does. But stopping the abuse, as soon as they stop the abuse, the relationships start to change anyway. When they start to step back and notice their impact and notice when they're lying, they often have a very weak relationship to the truth, and lie as is just a way of being. So that's another thing we work on, is stopping from lying, creating motivation to have better relationships. Statistically proven that relationships are important. It's statistically proven that at the end of life, when you're looking back at your life, that is what will have created the most satisfaction in your life. It's not how much you earned. It's not where you lived. It's not what you did. It's the people in your life. It's when you're on your deathbed and the people that are around you who love you. That's a big motivation. I ask, like, when they're at the end of your life, what do you want it to look like? Who do you want to be there? And then they'll name who they want to be there. And then I'm like, and why do you want them to be there? And because they will come in usually with a manipulative sort of orientation in the world where, you know, yeah, my family's going to be there. Well, yeah, they have to be there because I pay for this and I pay for that and I make sure that this happens. So they're going to be there. That's not the reason you want to have people at your deathbed. You want to have people at your deathbed because they love you, because how they feel with you is someone they want to be with, because how they feel with you matters. So how they feel with you is the reason they're pushing you away. And how they feel with you is the reason they will pull you closer. So we create that motivation that they want people to feel with them good. They want them to feel cared for. They want them to feel seen. They want them to feel understood. So, and they're doing this for their own selfish motivation that they want to have the best life. They really want to have the best. And so if they can get into this buy-in, because they've learned to be strong in ways that keeps them from having close relationships. So this is a sort of a deconstruction of their defenses. We work on empathy skills, work on practicing. I mean, essentially, you know, the term narcissism describes the childhood processes that everyone has. Narcissism isn't this toxic thing. It originally was just describing children. We are all self-focused. We are all self-referencing. The world revolves around us. We lack object constancy, meaning that what's happening right now feels really, really real, and I can forget sort of what happened before. That's one of the things that narcissists have to learn as well, is object constancy. Quite often they have polarized thinking. That's another thing we work on, is the black and white thinking. You're good, and then you're bad, and then you're good, and then you're bad. So they have like this on-off switch quite often, whereas when you're making them feel good about themselves, you're validating them in some way, you have their favor. But if you're making them feel bad about themselves, even a perceived criticism or just any recognition of imperfection, they're gonna see you as bad. And it's that, like, bad mommy. It's just like a kid. It's like a young child. So that's another thing to work on. They have to learn compassion. Compassion keeps us in our wise adult self. That first comes by developing compassion for themselves. We pretty much always discover some childhood trauma that emerges where they've made decisions about who they are as a person that was just profoundly damaging and lacking in compassion. And because narcissistic children, as we all are, we blame ourselves for everything. That's the other thing. If your parents get divorced, you think it's your fault if you're 7 years old, until they explain it to you that it's not your fault. Because that's narcissistic. You think everything's revolving around you. So those kind of things need healing. They're growing up in therapy, so they need relational therapy. If they're just doing CBT and things like that, they can end up being just a strong, independent person and still be narcissistic, and still not have close relationships. That's part of what's gone very wrong. Individualistic therapy has been teaching people to be okay even with narcissism, essentially. And the relatives of narcissists training them to be okay, like, you can regulate yourself and you can be fine on yourself and you can be strong alone. Like, no, that's the whole problem of narcissism, is being strong alone. We are meant to lean in each other. We are pack animals. We are not okay alone. We're not meant to be okay alone. And narcissism is just a reflection of being too alone.
Exactly. That's really lovely. And Darren, thank you so much for sharing your insights. It's really, really great. And I believe people will definitely going to resonate with your insights, and it's definitely going to help them for sure. So as we have embarked on a profound exploration of narcissism and relational healing, rather I wouldn't use the word healing, as Darren mentioned. So
let's say relational growth.
Yeah.
Relational maturity, because they're becoming more and more emotionally mature, you know, as they develop compassion and love. And also, I mean, part of the work is developing love loops, because I often will have someone try to love a pet first, because a pet loves you quite easily, and it's easy to love someone who's loving you. So practice feeling. Love is a feeling in your body. It's not some magical thing. It's an emotion that's in your body, and we can nurture love. And it's easier to nurture love when someone's loving us. So we usually nurture love with our mom. We usually nurture love with our dad. But if we didn't do that, we might be able to nurture love with a pet. By loving the pet and seeing that love come back to us, they can grow the feeling of love in their body. First, by trusting a pet. And after developing that feeling of love with a pet, they can move out to the more dangerous humans and start to invest in loving other humans. And when they discover that this feeling, actually loving others, feels good, it feels good in me. And then when I love them, they seem to love me back too. That feels good. That's what becomes sustainable. It's when they are able to create love loops. That's why they don't backtrack, because once they have those love loops going, they want to keep them, and it feels good, and it sustains them, and it's growing parts of themselves that hadn't had a chance to emerge before.
So dear listeners, it's really great, and let's remember that change is possible, and by fostering empathy, understanding, and compassion, we can unlock our loving potential and cultivate a healthy relationship. So thank you for joining us on this enlightening journey, and definitely we look forward to continuing to explore these important topics together. So till then, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really, really happy to share my passion topic, because